This is CliffCentral.com.
Leadership Transformation Platform 12 to 3 every Monday. All about leadership and how do you transform your SME, your school, because next up after this half hour is leadership and education. But this section is Transformation Platform. All about transformation. Of course, we're a transformative society. In fact, I think everywhere in the whole world, things are transforming politically, economically, definitely technologically, and that impacts everything. And we decided to just divert a little bit away and look at how the world is transforming. And certainly one of the best people that can, it seems to me, tell us about this is a man called Daniel Silk. So we'll go to him in a moment. Last week, we had an interesting conversation with Candy Tothill, GM Corporate Affairs, Tsogo-san. And she spoke about running a smooth and preparing for a smooth triple BEE verification process, which is a big issue in transformation in South Africa. But now we're going big picture stuff. Daniel Silk on the line, on Skype, whatever you say. Welcome, Daniel.
Yes, hello. Good to be with you.
Oh, that sounds nice and crisp. Thank you for speaking to us. Are you in Cape Town?
Yes, I'm in a very sunny Cape Town.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can brag when that happens every once in a while. Daniel, thank you for joining us. You know, this is a conversation which obviously we can have for a very long time because the world is in such an interesting space. I mean, everything is transforming. Transformation seems to be a never-ending state. It is the way of life. We cannot dream of thinking we're waiting for things to go back the way it used to be. We had the Celsi CEO on today who, you know, they're also transforming that industry in their own way. So today, you know, let's start big picture. As I said in the introduction, we talk about leadership and education. We have successful principals in the studio. At that level, we're talking. We just had a live SME audience, people trying to build their little businesses. We talk to next week the Liberty CEO, Liberty Life. So we look at it from all kinds of angles, and all of these individuals are being faced by the principles we'll discuss today. So on a biggest possible macro level, someone like you who's in the middle of all this thinking and projecting and speculating, how is the world transforming?
Well, that's a big question in itself. Look, it's transforming on a number of different fronts. I'm most interested, obviously, in the relationship between people, demographics in particular, politics and economics in the world. And there are huge changes taking place. The biggest big macro change to me is that there's simply more people on planet Earth. And there'll be 9 billion people over the course of the next 100 years on this planet. This continent in particular is the fastest growing demographic region of the world. Nigeria, for example, by 2100 is going to have nearly 800 million people, making it the third biggest population center in the world after China and India, and double the size, I might add, of the United States. And it's always one of the issues when I chat to businesses about this, and I try to highlight to them, listen, you know, you guys may be skeptical about Africa and about Nigeria and about the logistics and how tough it is to operate in a business environment, but let's just look at where the consumers of the future are going to be. And the consumers are going to be in the developing world, and certainly they're going to be in places like Nigeria. So demographics play a very, very important role. There's a shrinking demographic base in the Western world and a growing demographic base in the developing world. And I think that's, you know, my biggest sort of macro trend that I like to look at. But of course, this goes hand in hand with the, you know, the second really big trend, which you've alluded to, which is technology and the linkage of these people, of these billions of people now, into a common humanity via technology, and the our ability, of course, to reach out to people across this planet and for them to play a critical role in determining their own destiny, and also in simply communicating with one another, and I might add, becoming a lot more informed. So you've got a lot more people on the planet becoming a lot more informed about absolutely everything in real time simultaneously. And I think when you look at it, that way, you're looking at, you know, my third sort of big picture issue, which is just how much more competitive this world is going to become with more people linked more closely, more knowledgeable. It's an issue of individuals being competitive with one another, and of course businesses being competitive, and I might add also countries and cities and regions all being competitive with one another as a result. And I think these are the big picture trends. There are many others we could look at, and maybe we will over the course of the next half now.
That's a brilliant start. Richard?
Daniel, I mean, you make a statement there about the flow of information. I mean, I heard, and I'm going to use it as a contrast. I mean, I heard somebody commented around the global financial crisis, and you know, the questions of, you know, is this another, you know, Great Depression, worldwide recession, you know, of the 1930s, and the comment was made, well, back then, you know, when something started going wrong in let's call it the world economy, it took months for the impacts to be felt globally because it just information traveled so slowly. Nowadays, when something starts in that space, within probably seconds, it moves from, you know, whatever time zone it starts in Hong Kong, wherever it is in the Far East, and by the time other markets are awake on the same day, that information is actually hours old because people know and they can price into it in trading markets, etc. So, you know, you talk about how things have changed. I mean, we all know the thing of, you know, years ago you used to send somebody a physical mail, and it went in the post, and you'd get a response back a month and a half later. Nowadays, if somebody sends you an email and you haven't answered them in half an hour, they phone you and say, why haven't you looked at your email? You know, I just find that so, you know, the expectations are just so different in terms of the speed at which technology has now allowed information to flow, and the causal effects of that flow in terms of just expectations and how quickly people use information.
And if I might just say that the most best and perhaps controversial example of what you're saying is what happened in the latter part of December last year, when the former finance minister Nhlanhla Nene was fired from his job within a matter of hours. The markets had dictated their particular view of that issue, and of course had pushed up our borrowing rates to a point which put us in perilous danger as a nation that has large creditors and debtors. Our rates of borrowing went through the roof within literally a few minutes to a few hours of that announcement from President Zuma. So countries themselves, the rulers, governments themselves, have to understand the consequences of their action and how quickly information via the markets and by, and particularly the financial press, can influence a country or, for that matter, a business. We see it in terms of the business world as well. Bad press, bad reputation damage can have immediate effect. And what happens in a few hours can take months to mend, and sometimes never gets mended at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've talked when we were talking with Janine Hills from Vuma Reputation. I mean, it was very clear that, you know, reputation management, for example, in the days gone by, you had time to consider the news cycle in terms of what your response is going to be. Now, you've got to be able to respond as fast as somebody can type on Twitter. I mean, you know, you've got no time to sit back and consider your response. You know, something's happened. Ooh, okay, we're after the 6 o'clock news or 8 o'clock news cycle. Okay, the next time we're going to have to respond to this is in time for the morning press tomorrow morning. No. You've got to respond in the next 3 to 4 minutes, otherwise something else is going to happen.
That's so true, and it's got to be on every format, because there's no good just responding in the old sense of the word as a press relations statement. You've now got to respond on every format on which you're operational, which would include Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and all the rest. And if you miss out on one of them, that can be as damaging to your reputation as anything else.
So, Daniel, let's extrapolate this to South Africa. As you say, we can talk just global trends forever. Space, ocean, you know, there's so much coming our way. It's frightening and exceptionally exciting at the same time. Let's extrapolate back to South Africa. You've got the Malemas. I mean, let's not talk about that, but telling black South Africans to make more babies. So that speaks to the Africa growth. He's certainly wanting to contribute to that. But in essence, let's extrapolate it back to South Africa. I look at, firstly, you tell us what are some of the trends that may be attached to this big picture or not, the big picture movement in our country. What would you say stand out in your mind, top three, four again?
Well, look, again, I mean, I'm going to go back to this issue of population because it's relevant to us here in this country. Given the growth in the African population, there's a tremendous market for goods and services that are on our doorstep. And I think for South Africa, really to understand that this is a continent of the future, notwithstanding the volatility that we do see in economic performance on the continent right now and perhaps into the next year or so, I still expect Africa to be an area of growth, and it will outgrow many other parts of the world, particularly the developed world. So South Africa needs to take advantage of this particular trend in population growth, and I might add the other big urban trend across our continent, which is urbanization, the movement of people out of rural areas into cities. This is a feature of our life here in South Africa, making our cities not only livable, not only with efficient services, but cities that are competitive globally is going to be a core challenge for us. And it really is a trend that I think we need to grasp, the importance of the smart city, the linkage of the city to communication, to the internet, to an education and skills base, and to innovative investment programs. These are very big trends. But thirdly, from a South African point of view, I think we also need to understand that the global economy is changing. Whilst we relied in this country and many other countries relied upon what we take out of the ground, the extractive minerals, the iron ore, the gold, the diamonds of this country, the commodity super cycle has taken a back seat. These prices are down, and countries need to diversify the economy into the future. And I want to give you one example of a country that's really thought about the future and how it affects them. And that really is the United Arab Emirates, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And I would also argue, that Saudi Arabia is doing the same thing. They understand that a future world is not going to be as reliant upon oil as it was in the last 100 years. And you've got to shift and change your economy, and you've got to provide a new skills base for your population. And these are countries that have got deep pockets, and they can do it perhaps more easily than others. But still, they've looked into the future, and they've seen these big trends. Fourthly, I would also argue just quickly that, you know, in geopolitics, which is the linkage of geography and politics in the world, we all more tied in with China's fortunes than ever before. China today is South Africa's biggest single nation trading partner. And if China catches a cold, which it has to a degree, its economy is a little off the boil, then of course the demand from China for our exports also tapers off. We need to also think ahead of the curve. It's not just about China into the future. Many other societies are going to be important. We need to cover our hedge, our bets, so to speak, across the world. And as a result, we need to think very strategically from a geographic point of view as to where we place our efforts, from a foreign policy point of view, from an international relations point of view. These are all big macro issues that we need to apply as a country as well, and businesses need to do very much the same on a smaller level.
All right, technology in South Africa, also part of the macro picture?
Yeah. Yes, technology, I think our access to technology in South Africa has improved over the years. In fact, we've become relatively globally competitive when it comes to access to new technology. It's still too expensive, and it still doesn't reach the right areas of South Africa. In other words, the poorer sectors of our community. But there has been a distinct improvement. And in fact, that improvement of access to technology is measured in a very important survey called the Global Competitiveness Survey, which is put out by the World Economic Forum. And I urge you, and I urge any of the listeners, to download this Global Competitiveness Report, because it really does place South Africa in the global context in a ranking of 140 countries to see where we do well and where we don't. And we don't do too badly on access to innovation and to technology. But ultimately, we've got to make it accessible for our people. We've got to make it extremely affordable. And of course, it's got to be technically secure and reliable. And I'm not convinced that we've done enough of that, because we know an increased rollout of the internet in an affordable fashion adds to our GDP. It adds to GDPs all over the world, and it will add to us as well. So from a big global trend point of view, we've got to become more tech savvy, or certainly we've got to have access to that technology as ordinary and especially poorer South Africans.
But interestingly, I mean, we were talking earlier, we had Jose, DeSantos, the CEO of Cell C on the Leadership Masterclass, and he was talking about some of the innovations that they've got going, their Wi-Fi hotspot calling, for example. And, you know, he made the comment, you know, somebody said to him, who are your competitors? And he said, the government and the regulators. And he made the point that, you know, many of these great innovations that really allow us to tap into those resources that are so needed in so many poorer environments and are needed to lift the, let's call it, the economic capability of our country. And I don't think it's unique to South Africa, by the way, so don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's our problem only, but the world of controlled and regulated environments, it really is problematic in the world of access and information flow, etc. No boundaries, and you've also got to be very careful. I mean, I you often hear these and think of, you know, do you just want absolutely uncontrolled flow of information everywhere, and what are the implications of that? And there are some severe implications of some things, and, you know, what's acceptable to me may not be acceptable to you, and vice versa. So, you know, there's questions of morality on issues and value systems and all the rest. So there's always, you know, pros and cons of all this, but it just strikes me that technology particularly seems to be almost a little bit of an over-regulated space, particularly in the South African context.
Look, I think you're finding technology as a disruptive force in business in many, many different industries. And as we are in what I would regard as a very significant initial phase of global transition using technology, you are finding that those businesses that are being disrupted by technology or being disrupted by more nimble or more innovative players are the ones who would prefer a certain degree of regulation to remain to protect their vested interests and their product in the marketplace. Yeah. And I think that conflict is a conflict that's playing itself out. It perhaps plays itself out, if I might say, in the particularly in the mobile phone space, as new technologies threaten revenue streams from before. Mm. But I was just looking now at the figures for luxury vehicle sales now in the United States, and it's very interesting just to see how the BMWs and the Mercedes and even the Porsches, their sales figures are down quite dramatically. But of course, where have those sales gone? They've gone to Tesla. They've gone to the electric vehicle. Mm. So in these times of severe disruption, which we are in, there is going to be a battle between those who are progressive and those who want the status quo to remain as long as possible. And I think we might well see that the corporate battles of the now and perhaps of the near future are going to be around this type of regulation. It's a separate issue relating to ethics and, let's say, morality and the free flow of information. But I like to see regulation more as something that allows us to really be unshackled when it comes to innovation. And I think that the shackles that bind us are starting to loosen, but this is a period of conflict between these two forces currently in the world.
Fascinating times. You know, earlier we heard that Facebook obviously run into some of these regulatory issues in some countries that don't allow, shall we say, social media, but they're putting their own satellite in space. So they just get around some of these issues. It's quite amazing, this battle between it's a different form of power. I get the feeling that some leaders are still stuck in the industrial age power struggle of land and resources and all those kind of things, while the new battle is something different, Daniel, isn't it? About information, it's about technology, it's about accessibility. It's much more than you know. I know our leaders struggle for land. They want land, and that's always important. But somehow that's the industrial age struggle. While in this third wave, as someone recalled or call it, it's a different struggle, and politicians are not seeing it.
Yeah, isn't it also about content? In terms of, you know, so it's the richness of what you can provide rather than, you know, the land you do it on or the platform you do it on. Daniel?
Look, I think there are a number of ways of looking at this. One thing I just want to say at the outset is that we see new power players in the world. Companies and corporations have always had power. But the big companies that we've referred to, the Facebooks of this world, the Teslas of this world, the Googles and Apples, are now able to create essentially their own product ecosystem, which takes them away from relying upon the state And again, we see a second battle emerging here between the state, who still wishes to retain political control for a variety of reasons, and of course these big corporate entities who are able to create their own ecosystem. You know, you only have to look at countries and societies, countries in particular, who wish to retain, let us say, a control over their transportation network, to develop a state-run transportation network. Well, they're not thinking about the future, because the Apples of this world and the Googles will initiate and produce their own set of standards, whether it's for electric vehicles, whether it's charging stations, whether it's electric trains and special railway gauges. That won't be produced by governments. It won't even be initiated by governments. It's the private sector and these big corporates that are going to do that in future. So it's a point that one needs to make about the changing nature of power and who has power today in the world. That's shifting and changing, and I think also creating a degree of conflict, as some governments just don't understand that they will have to relinquish this power over a period of time. In terms of content, look, content is something that we all we have access to, multiple offerings of content now from everywhere all the time. And it's a wonderful era, I think, for all of us as individuals to be in, and that we can customize our content and choose our content accordingly. So I have to say, in terms of content flow, again, governments wish to regulate content. They wish to regulate the media. They wish to control and institute all sorts of media regulations. It ain't gonna fly, as the old saying goes. This will be certainly usurped by our access to technology and the myriad of options that we have.
It's almost as though there's a force creating another world, another sphere, away from the one that we're used to here on this planet. And it's not even in space, but there's another world being created. And if people don't tap into that, that world will run concurrently with the industrial age one. And if governments don't catch up quickly, I don't know where it's going to go. It's going to clash somehow. But back home, you literally have governments like, for example, our ruling government, the ANC, who would think that perhaps, and I'm assuming, that this information age has not carried fast enough to their main constituency out there. And then they end up in the Eastern Cape with empty venues. And they must start realizing, hold on, more people have access to the type of phones, the iPhones and so on, that today than they realize, and they are more informed than ever before. And if they think that they can hold on to a certain power base forever more because they're uneducated and uninformed, they will totally underestimated, and they could literally blink their eyes, and things are compounding so fast that within one election cycle they could be out of it. I know that's dramatic, but that's the escalation we're seeing on a political level, I think.
I just want to relate what you're saying to, I think, an important political trend that we see in South Africa, and that is the difference in the way people in the rural areas of South Africa express themselves politically versus the urban. And in the urban area, certainly, South Africans have got much more access to technology. They've got much more access to alternative sources of information as well. And of course, they have access to different political parties who have it easier in canvassing and campaigning in urban areas. And I think what we've seen in the last election, and what we're going to see now running through this election and even into the future, is more of a marked to South Africa a scenario, an urban South Africa where politics becomes much more competitive between the various players, simply because there's just more information out there from the various players, and a rural South Africa where this is not quite as apparent as yet, and it'll be a more traditional vote and political expression from those voters. So again, access to information clearly in urban areas has a dramatic effect. And the role of the urban conurbation, not just in our physical environment, not just in the workplace environment, but in changing our values and our political thought processes as well, is becoming a lot more important. And we may well see this. It's not just a South African phenomenon. I would argue that the political urbanization issue is going to hit Africa big time over the course of the next 20, 30 years.
I think there's a lot of things happening on ground level. We've had a guy in the studio here from Africa's Got Game, where they're putting up pop-up facilities, brilliantly constructed, with access to Wi-Fi, access to free online education, and distance jobs, and so on. I mean, they're bringing the, shall we say, the under-resourced world into the resourced world. the second economy into the first economy. A lot of groundswell things happening, which if politicians don't have their finger on the pulse, they will suddenly blink and realize our people know much more than we thought. Before we end today, I just want us to look at how do we train, prepare leaders for this world that we're describing here, which we can spend much more time describing, of course. And also, how should kids be prepared at school level? That, to me, is very important. I feel like our education system is about homework, it's about memorizing, it's about so many issues, and we're not preparing our kids for this escalating, this world that's just escalating into something that we even struggle to define. So how do we train, prepare leaders for this world, and then also our kids in schools, our education system?
Now, look, I spend a lot of time with audiences telling them about the world out there. And I think part of our problem, and it's a problem everywhere in the world, is that people are far too myopic. They are caught up in their everyday life, in their everyday work with their family. And what they are unable to do, simply because they don't have time or perhaps the necessary resources, is to look beyond their own immediate environment. And, I can put up a picture on a screen of a city in China called Chongqing. And Chongqing is a city that many of us have not heard of. We've heard of Beijing and Shanghai, but Chongqing itself has got a population of anywhere between 20 and 30 million people. It's a massive urban conurbation.
Wow.
And if you don't realize that there are many Chongqings out there, they're not just in China, they're in India, they're elsewhere in the world as well. These are your new marketplaces, your new flashpoints in the future. And there are many in Africa, and for that matter, in South Africa as well. So a knowledge of the global trends, to me, is absolutely critical. It's something that can be conveyed to school children. It's something that can certainly be conveyed in the business environment as well. And this goes to all sorts of things. It's how technology in your space is changing. It's where your customer is going to be in future, and where those urban centers are going to be of innovation. It's of healthcare and medical advances and how that's going to affect you as an individual, whether you're a child today. Are you going to live longer? How will that affect your work path into the future? You know, all of these issues have to be looked at. You've just got to get out of your immediate, I think, small environment. And that, to me, is the way to do it. And I spend a lot of time with companies going through each and every one of these sort of big trends that we talk about and many more. And usually it's an eye-opener to people. And I might add, it's not just people who are in the poorer segments of the community, even middle management or even at executive level. Understanding these dynamic global trends is often the big surprise of their day or in coursework that I do. And I think that's what I like to do with groups, and certainly what I think is more necessary across the board.
So can I kind of end off with this thought, and then Louis and Richard can quickly give closing remarks. This is the challenge, I think, Daniel, is that more than ever before, leaders have to look at the big picture, and they have to set their sights on the future and analyze and think and read and be aware of the changes, because they come so fast and they almost past you before you realize that it's happened. That's the one part of it. But then economically, because leaders aren't seeing this picture, they are so fixated with their current challenge, and it's so difficult to be profitable and to run a business successfully that they do become, tunnel vision focused. And they almost have to, because they have to survive, and it's cost saving. So it's almost a dilemma. There's maybe a dichotomy. You have to focus, and you're under pressure like never before to perform. So you become inward focused, but yet the need is there for you like never before to be outward focused. So dealing with that sort of contrast is not easy, I think, for leaders. Louis?
Yes.
A quick comment on that,
sorry.
Daniel? Yeah?
No, I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely right, and I think there is this balance that has to be found. And I think we see more and more, certainly corporate executives understand the need to move beyond their own immediate environment. I mean, if you're selling a product into Nigeria, you have to understand the packaging that appeals to a Nigerian. You have to understand the quantity that Nigerian is going to buy of that particular product. And obviously the supply chain is entirely different there than it is anywhere else. It's not just transplanting product or service anymore. It's really understanding the entire chain of that transplantation effort. And that's what's so much more difficult today, but also so much more rewarding when you get it right. It really involves multiple talents, and it involves an understanding of culture and different cultures as well. And this, to me, is critical in the world today. It's not just about me or about you. It's about different people across the world, because I think we're living in this era where everybody today is as important as the next person, as a consumer. They, everyone has got that consumer might and muscle today. So everybody has to be respected on that basis.
Daniel Salk, thank you so much for joining us today. That was very informative, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
All the best. All right, just we're out of time, but Richard, quick summary. And Louis, anything you want to say before we move on to leadership and education?
Daniel, thank you. We appreciate immensely. You just reaffirmed the tremendous importance of context in good leadership. Everything is contextual. All meaning is contextual. Thanks.
True, Richard. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, just the whole point of things are moving so quickly that if you are asleep as a leader, you're going to be left behind. It's just so clear. And you need to wake up and realize where you're at.
Thank you so much. And the big question is, are we preparing our children sufficiently for this? We need great teachers, and we have one in the studio today. Are they preparing our kids for this world that is just changing like it's unprecedented? So next up, our Leadership and Education show or feature, the last half hour of our Leadership Transformation Platform. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.